Welcome, dear listeners, to Our Queer Experience. We have a special treat today. We are here with author and Huffington Post contributor Suzanne DeWitt Hall. She has not only authored the Bumble Pimple Adventures children books, but she also has the Where True Love Is, an affirming devotional for LGBT+ individuals and their allies. She is so hard at work on furthering teaching about gender to kids so they can feel more free to be authentic to themselves. Her work is designed to shine the light of love into hearts darkened by discrimination and fear. She lives with her beloved wife, two terriers, and a cat named Chicken, and her life is so full of joy, it's surprising her health can hold it all. Welcome, Suzanne. We are so happy to have you here.
Thank you. I'm very honored to be here talking to you guys today.
Yeah, thanks for reaching out.
Well, that was my wife, because she is on top of all things social media. So she connects me, because I try to spend more time behind the typewriter creating, and she's out there on the forefront studying what's happening in the world. So it works out well.
So like you're a good team.
Makes us, yeah.
That I'm sorry, do you have a question?
Oh, Bruce.
Well, as you said, it sounds like you make a good team, but I do have a quick question about your bio. So you have a cat named Chicken? That's hilarious.
We have a cat named Chicken. Most of our animals have weird names, because one is Rumpelpimple, and his real name is Charles. Chicken, her real name is Anastasia Butterscotch, and our other terrier's name is Philip. So I don't know. He is the straightest one of the bunch, apparently.
That's awesome.
Philip sounds so regal.
And he's totally not. He's like the craziest little toddler furball kind of wackadoodle kid. So, the name is funny, but somehow it just stuck.
That's awesome.
I love it.
So the Where True Love Is, what kind of inspired you to write that devotional?
Well, my wife and I, we came from very conservative, socially conservative Christian backgrounds. She was primarily Baptist in her upbringing, and my formation had come through studying the Catholic Church. So both of us were married to men in unhappy marriages at the time that we met. And we met in church and became friends. And then over a couple of years, the relationship changed into love. And so because of our conservative Christian background, we had to figure out what was going on, what God was doing, because we firmly believed that we were brought together for a reason and a purpose, and that it was God's will. So we had to study the scriptures in a different way that we had before. So the book is a result of our daily Bible studies, thoughts that came out of Sunday services and sermons and reading, and it's a compilation of the thoughts and revelation that we received throughout those years, about, 7 or 8 years of study.
Wow. So it's a labor of love. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're pretty excited about it and very happy with how it came out.
That's great. So was it kind of team written, or did you firmly take the lead and your wife contribute from her experiences from time to time?
Well, I'm the writer of of our team. And so what would happen is that we would discuss something and we would come across some kind of a nugget. And a lot of the times it was through our discussion. Some of the times it wasn't. It was from other settings or things I would come across or, thoughts that would come to me directly. And then I would go off and formulate it and sort of expand on it. And it's a funny thing in writing. It's kind of a process of thinking through. So a lot of times it would be born or just started, kind of inseminated, I guess, in conversation. But oftentimes it's the writing process that develops it. I don't know if either of you do any writing, but there's something that happens during the writing process that's actually part of the creation and part of kind of the revelation. So that's how that works.
That's cool. So did you find that writing kind of helped you process? So you talked about how you and your wife met when you were both married to men at the time, and that you formed a quick friendship that developed into more. Were you also writing about that process, and did that kind of help you make sense of your feelings?
I wasn't writing about that much because it wasn't safe to. I didn't have a safe place to, you know what I mean? I mean, my journals, paper journals weren't safe. I had a blog called The Theology of Desire that I'd been writing for a few years, which was exploring the kind of interconnection of spirituality and sexuality. And so I channeled some of my emotion into pieces there, but none of them were processing literally what was happening in my life.
Well, can you talk a little more about what it was like, not only for that kind of relationship to evolve as it did, but how you kind of dealt with it? Because it sounds like your blog was maybe your only outlet to kind of process those emotions. So how were you able to keep up with all the feelings?
That's a good question, because there was so much happening at the time. I mean, my marriage was ending. We had dated since I was 15 years old and he was a year older. So, and Ed stayed married until 2010, I left. So, and I'm 50 something. What am I? 54, 53, somewhere in there. So, you know, we were married a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not, you know, it was not a match made in heaven, that's for sure. So there was the issues of my own marriage in its death throes happening, and this new thing with Diane happening. So there's this intense sorrow and intense joy. So I think most of the processing took place just between Diane and I talking it through. We're both very verbal, and we communicate a lot, and we communicate well. And so I think most of it was just through the process of conversation with each other, because we didn't have a community, an accepting and affirming community at that time. We had met in a socially and Christian conservative church, so there was no one to talk about it there. So we really just processed it on our own until it was a few years in before we had our first chance to talk to a lesbian friend of mine and kind of come out to her and be able to have conversations.
That's really cool. Do y'all currently belong to faith community?
We do. We are part of the Methodist Church right now, which the denomination, I don't know if you've heard, but the denomination is going through a process of discerning how to move forward, to map a way forward with affirmation and inclusion of LGBTQ+ people. It's a complex time in their history because in the United States, for the most part, people would like it to be affirming and inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
Around the world, however, it's a different story. In particular, in Africa, it's very socially conservative, and it's a large, fast-growing segment of the denomination. And so, you know, right now, the denomination is structured with a single kind of code of conduct and a book. They call it the Book of Discipline. So they're kind of trying to figure out what to do. And we feel called to the Methodist denomination. This is United Methodist.
Mm-hmm.
To be part of that conversation and to be part of that decision-making process, because congregations are going to have to be voting on what to do in early next year.
Wow. So you're being an activist on different levels. That's really inspiring.
It's interesting how God calls you into different things and lines things up so that you see the path that you're supposed to be on, because we came from an Episcopal denomination before. We lived in Massachusetts and moved to Missouri to be near family for some family issues that were taking place. And in Massachusetts, we attended Episcopal churches. And number one, Massachusetts was kind of the first state to be on the LGBTQ rights bandwagon. So it's pretty comfortable there. And number two, the Episcopal church is similarly early on in the bandwagon. And so there's not a lot of work to do there in either of those sort of mission fields for progress. They're both pretty well on their way, you know, they're progressive in those issues. So we come to this area and the events all line up where this Methodist church down the street from us is sort of poised to be making a move. And what's happening within the denomination is poised, and this meeting that's going to be taking place early next year is actually happening in St. Louis, of all places, from all around the world. And there's this Reconciling Ministries group, which works with not just Methodist churches, but it came out of the Methodist church and focuses on them, which we're increasingly involved with. that we'll be, you know, presenting with. We're going to be on a panel in June. And, so everything sort of lines up, and you know that God has you where He wants you, and you know, and sometimes it's not comfortable, and it's not where you want to be necessarily, and it's not what you thought would be happening, but it's where you should be.
I feel inspired. What about you, Bruce?
Yeah, totally. I don't want to. So on this podcast, Andrea and I, you know, we share our deepest, darkest things, and so I don't necessarily expect that from a guest. I'll edit this out later if you don't feel comfortable answering. That's totally legitimate.
Okay.
So you were later in your life whenever you got with Diane. Was that the first woman that you were in a relationship with?
Yes. Both Diane and I have always identified as heterosexual. We're, you know, I say that we are the Q, one of the definitions of Q in LGBTQ, because we both have been heterosexual, have both had relationships with men our whole lives, and yet we fell in love and are deeply in love. And we have all of, you know, every aspect of our lives, our minds, souls, bodies, every part of us is in love and are acting in the way that spouses act. So it's an odd situation. We can't explain it. But, yeah, no, we don't consider ourselves lesbians because we're not, you know, sexually attracted to other women. Our sole focus is on each other.
I get it. And that's something that's not is not highlighted very much within the LGBT community. So I appreciate you sharing that a lot.
Yeah, and I'm not sure. I know that bisexuals can have some, that sometimes there's distrust within the community and that there's some biases. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure what people think about what lesbians as a whole, and obviously they're all stereotypes. I can't say, you know, all lesbians are going to look at anything one way. It's ridiculous. But, you know, I'm not sure. We haven't gotten pushback or criticism. We've gotten some questions before, and about, like, one person asked, since I said that we identify as heterosexual, how can then we be part of the LGBTQ community? But so I wrote this piece that it's like, I feel like I'm heterosexual and queer, because there's this whole spectrum of things. You know, your base orientation is one thing, but, you know, I think that can morph and change. And, sexuality and gender are just not, there's not these concrete lines built up as walls between all these things, I don't think, in all cases.
Yeah. How did your family respond? I'm not sure if you have, I don't think you have any children, but like your ex-husband and, you know, these people that are important in your life, how did they respond?
Yeah, we both have children, actually. And I think the bigger issue was that my marriage ended very badly. I mean, it wasn't good to begin with, and it ended very badly. And so my kids were hurt by all that. Now, my daughter was college, and my son was just finishing high school, so they weren't little. But they were still hurt, and there was damage. But I think it had much more to do with the way the marriage ended than it did with me being with a woman. You know, I think young people the world is changing, and, you know, and younger people are much more accepting of non-binary relationships and people. So Diane's kids were pretty accepting over time. Also, they were confused because both of us, you know, I think our kids in general were confused. It's like, how can you have had this pretty strong stance that homosexuality was, you know, the Catholic Church calls it intrinsically disordered. You know, so our stance was that it wasn't good, it wasn't right, it wasn't healthy. So, you know, there was some confusion, but I don't think that it was a big problem. Now, with parents, it was another story. Diane's mom had a real problem with it and is still increasingly accepting of me, and she's a lovely, lovely woman. My mother didn't have a big problem with us being a couple, but when it came to us getting married, she had a little bit of a regression and a problem there. So, but then she's, you know, at this point, she's on board too. So it's tricky. I feel for families because they, you know, they have their perceptions and they have their biases through often through no fault of their own. And here they are presented with this news, and they have to try to respond as graciously as they're able. You know, it can't be easy.
Sure.
Yeah.
And that's something I'm going through with my own family is, you know, it's still kind of awkward to talk to them on the phone. I haven't seen them in person since I came out to them. So, I mean, it's a work in progress. So, I mean, I get what you're saying, that just baby steps, you know?
How long ago was that?
I came out to them in June of last year.
Oh, so it's very fresh.
Yeah, it is.
Are they religious?
But they're very religious. Grew up Pentecostal. So
oh, wow.
Very conservative. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm their only kid, and they're trying to wrap their brains around it, but it's hard for them. I mean, it's hard for me too, you know?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It'll get better. It'll get better.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And I appreciate you sharing, you know, your family story too. You probably weren't expecting to get into that, talking about a book, but I appreciate that a lot.
Oh, it's no problem. I mean, the experience is universal, or nearly universal, for LGBTQ people. So it needs to be talked about, and people need to be encouraged. And sometimes families don't ever accept, and that's also something you need encouragement with, that you can find other people, you can find your own tribe, there can be healing despite this, you know, the horrible pain. It's unfortunately so common.
But I know there's a growing term of chosen family.
That
a lot of folks
term.
Are using. Yeah. Speaking of families, we want to talk a little more about the children books that you have.
Yes.
So can you tell us more about the Mumble Pimple Adventures?
Sure. So we have this crazy werefox terrier named Rumple Pimple. And when he was little, he used to get in all kinds of trouble. And I thought it would just make a fun kids book where he would be the hero and he would get in trouble, but it would always be for trying to do something, something good, something right. So in the first adventure, there's the family structure is just like ours. So there's the two moms, and his sister is a bossy cat named Chicken, just like the real world. And Rumplepimple is causing me all kinds of trouble when I'm trying to get work done. And so the other mom takes him to the grocery store. And when she opens the door, he dashes out, runs across the parking lot, and runs into the store. So what the mom doesn't know is that there's a little girl in there being bullied. And so Rumplepimple jumps in to save the day, pulls the blanket back, pees on the child's foot because the real Rumplepimple likes to pee on things, and basically saves the day. The mom comes in and finds Rumplepimple getting up sniffing the meat counter. So many elements in this story are true. Diane did take him to the store. He did run into the grocery store, and she did find him at the meat counter. So all that was real and funny. So I figured I would tap into this kind of universal concept that kids feel that they aren't understood, and that, you know, they might be just playing and a vase gets broken, or, you know, things happen. And so I was tapping into that. And I also thought it was important to have books that show alternate family structures mm-hmm. and diversity. So, you know, the fact that there's two moms there isn't addressed. It's not, you know, it's not an issue. They're just there. It's just part of the story. That's just who his family is. So that's book number one.
Cool. So it's almost like he's a secret superhero.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, let me tell you quickly about the second story, because that does something a little bit different. It's the same situation, same family structure, but in this case, Rumplepimple has a sidekick because a family moves in next door. They have a cat named Mr. Noodles, who wears a tutu and a pink bow. And Mr. Noodles runs downtown when a big street festival is going on. So Rumplepimple's worried about him. So he jumps through the screen door, chases him downtown, gets picked up by police, ends up in a jail cell, and that's where his mom finds him. So, and that is roughly also a true story where we did have to go get him out of jail. It was a human jail, and he was literally released from a jail cell. So,
yeah. He's like paid bail.
He's crazy. So in this case, I want, you know, it's the same family with the two moms, but in this case, we have this character who, you know, it's a male, it's Mr. Noodles, but he happens to be wearing a tutu and a bow. So, again, having just the character there, it's not an issues book, it's okay, you know, it's an adventure book, but having this kind of non-binary gender presentation as being just okay and just there is sort of part of our mission.
So can you tell us more about the importance of having these things just kind of there and maybe not making a big deal out of it, but just saying, oh, look, this is happening. Can you tell us more about that choice to do it that way as opposed to addressing it straight head on?
Yes, I think it's part of the progression of social acceptance. You know, we needed books like Leslie Ann Newman's Heather Has Two Mommies back in the, when did she write it? Was it the 80s or 90s? I mean, it's been a long time now. It's iconic, you know, and we needed it at that time. But we don't so much need that anymore, and I think that there's this progression of social acceptance where I don't know if there were ever books that said kind of like, teacher, teacher, why is Johnny's skin so brown? But clearly, that's not necessary. You know what I mean? It's just like, okay, people are used to having diversity, and it's grown to be expected and understood to be inclusive of diversity in literature. And if it's not inclusive, it's viewed that there's something wrong with it. You know, you need to have kids in wheelchairs, and you need to have kids of all different ethnicities, and you need to have LGBTQ people showing up in kids' literature. So I just knew that it was increasingly time for that we don't need the books about explaining same-sex couples anymore. We just need them in the story. So, you know, our book is kind of one of those early wave stories that does that, the Rumple Pimple book. And then I don't know of any other book that did that with a non-binary gender presentation kids book yet. So far, most of them, there's some great ones out there, like Leslie has Sparkle Boy, and Christina Baldacchino has Morris Micklewhite in a Tangerine Dress. So we're in this, right now we're in the era of we have to explain that kids don't have to be binary, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, Rumple Pimple, I think, is the Rumple Pimple Goes to Jail is the first one where it's gone to the next step. It's not an issues book. It's an adventure book who has a diverse character.
And that's really cool. Do you, have you had the opportunity to, like, go to libraries or schools or other places where you can, like, read the books and kind of have conversations with children around them?
We haven't done a ton. You know what? I launched these two books, the devotional and the second Rumple Pimple book, at about the same time. So we haven't, you know, I don't necessarily recommend that because the focus, we know that the world is really hurting for LGBTQ people and youth, and, you know, that Christianity has done a lot of harm. So our primary focus on promotion has been for the devotional. We'll be shifting back to Rumple Pimple Goes to Jail. Our readings of it with individual kids has been kind of remarkable and fun, that they're just so accepting and they don't really even ask that many questions. It's just, they just kind of get it. And so it's really fun to see that they're so much farther ahead than adults are.
That's so cool, because for them it's just, oh, this is, a funny character that wears a tutu.
Yeah. They just don't care. The same thing with the two moms. We were reading it to our, I guess he's a great nephew. And he's just little. He's only three, but he's like remarkably smart. And he was, I couldn't read all the words because it would have been too much for a three-year-old. It, you know, the book is great for like six to eight is like the optimal age. But he was interested in it. And so I was simplifying the story on each page. And there was a picture where it had the two moms and the police officer, and they were getting Rumple Pimple out of jail, and he said, he has two mommies? And I said, yes, he does. And he said, is that the daddy? And I said, nope, that's the police officer. And he said, oh, and that was it. That was, you know, he's cool with it.
Have you had any pushback? I can imagine parent groups getting perhaps up in arms over something like this.
We have had, because we haven't been promoting it crazily, we haven't had too much for this book. We got more for the first book. Diane has been banned on Facebook several times for promoting it, however, because it'll go places and people just find it offensive and so they'll shut it down. Christine Baldacchino's book, Morris Micklewhite and the Tangerine Dress, has been recommended by like the California State School Board as part of their diversity lessons. And people, so in the news over the past 6 months, there have been multiple stories of parents groups and Christian groups organizing events in various places around the country to protest that that book is, you know, so outrageous and shouldn't be permitted and blah, blah, blah. You know, we self-published for a lot of reasons. We chose to self-publish. And so Rumpelpimple isn't as widely, it doesn't have the same exposure as going with a traditional publisher does. I'm sure that if and when it gets attention, there will be pushback because there always is.
Yeah, maybe you'll end up on ALA's banned book list, which would be quite the feat.
Good day. Yeah. Good marketing point.
I think we're running out of time, right, Bruce?
We are running out of time. We, in the description of this podcast, we'll put a link to Suzanne's Amazon site. But is there a better way that people can reach you?
Yes, well, my wife is extremely active on social media, so you can find Rumpelpimple and Where True Love Is on Twitter and on Facebook prominently. Where True Love Is website has some good information on it, so that's just wheretrueloveis.com. Yes, if you Google either one, you're likely to find them, especially Rumpelpimple, because there's really not too many other words like that out there.
Perfect, thank you.
Thank
you very much
for
being
so much
for
joining us.
Oh, it was my pleasure. It was great fun to talk to you.
And we look forward to seeing your books take off and looking at the entire Rumpelpimple collection one day.
There will be more. My wife tells me we're going to write more. Thank you.
Looking forward to it. Suzanne, thank you very much. And thank you folks at home for tuning in today. It was a pleasure to have you. Come back on, we have new episodes going up on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Check us out. We'll see you next time.
Bye, y'all.